If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Podcasting since 2005. You are listening to Gamer Tag Radio with your hosts Godfrey, Pete Rock, Paris, Poster.
Hey, what's up, world? Patrick here, aka Paulston J, and you are listening to Gamertag Radio, episode 525. Now, it's going to be a one-man show again this week, going back to the Paulston J show, but more importantly, we're talking all about the PlayStation Experience 2015, which just wrapped up this past weekend out in San Francisco, California, and I was lucky enough to be able to travel out to the event to cover it for you guys. And man, let me tell you, I played some great games, talked to some really cool developers, and overall just had a huge amount of fun hanging out with all the hardcore PlayStation fans that were lucky enough or dedicated enough to make the travels out there. So hats off to you guys. We had a blast that weekend. It was so much fun. I wish it had been longer. There's just not enough hours in the day to see all of the cool stuff that was available. But before we jump into all that, don't forget, if you like what you're hearing, subscribe to Gamertag Radio on Stitcher, Spotify, or iTunes. Leave us a review. We'd love to hear from you. And if you want to send us some feedbacks, questions, or concern, you can send that to fanmail@gamertagradio.com. Or if you want, leave us a voicemail at 786-273-7GTR. That's 786-273-7GTR. Now, I recorded a lot of great interviews with some really cool developers at the PlayStation Experience over the course of 2 days. So without further ado, let's jump right into it and check out some sweet new games that you need to keep an eye out for that are coming next year on the PlayStation 4 or the Vita. So let's jump into it right now.
This is Gamer Tag Radio. Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
Hey, what's up, Gamertag? Patrick here, live at PlayStation Experience 2015 in San Francisco, California. A lot of games on display right now, a whole lot of stuff, but first off, I had to start off the day with this new title I've heard called Masquerada Songs and Shadows. I'm joined by my good friend Nicholas here. Nicholas, what do you do on Masquerada?
I'm the writer for the game, actually.
Writer, and I've heard this game is pretty long. How many pages of script did you end up writing for this game?
Oh, God. I think it ended up being something like 600.
Wow. And that was that a rough draft, or is that you kind of going back to me like, I need to trim a bit more from this?
That's like the final product. Okay. Like the final one was 600. Like we have gone through tons of drafts. It's insane. Okay. I think we've been working on that, the script at least, for like a year and 9 months. So that was a long time.
So like starting out for Masquerade, people don't know, it's a top-down, like a 2.5 asymmetric game. You use this comparison to Dragon Age Origins I like. I see a bit of Baldur's Gate in there, a little bit of Diablo. What came first, the idea to make this game the story or like the fact that you kind of wanted to make this style of an RPG?
I think it was the story, the entire setting. So a little bit about the origins of the game. The creative director, who unfortunately is not here with us today, he conceptualized the world as a setting for a D&D campaign.
Okay.
And he really, really liked it. And so when the company came alive, he was like, you know what, I want to make this into a game. And so things happened. I got in contact with him. I started working on the world, started building the story. And that's how it started. So it started off as a story first, and then we looked at how to turn it into a game.
Okay. So the pen and paper obviously covered the ground rules. You built the universe. You built the lore up. So what attracted you to this gameplay model? Is it because, you know, past games like Baldur's Gate pulled inspiration directly from D&D? Or did you feel like did you try other methods of game and you kind of decided this was going to be the best method for telling this story that I want to tell? Because I can tell the plot is pivotal in this game. The lore is really good. I like the build-up. I like the setup about it. I guess kind of run down, like, what did you want to do by turning this into an RPG like this?
I think it was principally to pay homage to the genre of RPGs, because that's what kind of inspired Ian, the creative director.
Exactly.
And I think when we talk about telling stories in games, in the company, I think most of us are really, really drawn to the way stories work in RPGs. And I think that was the primary reason why we chose to put it on an RPG.
I guess a little bit of background. Masquerada. There's the concept of the mask. I got that much as much. Briefly break down, you know, who are we playing as and what is kind of the story that drives the plot forward?
All right, so what happens is you're playing... the name of your main character is Cicero.
Okay.
And what happens is 5 years before the events of the game, there was a civil war. Because in this world, people with masks and people without masks, the divide is huge. You have, you know, like the bourgeois and the proletariats. And so Cicero's brother was involved with an, he was involved in an uprising 5 years ago. And Cicero had the chance to stop him. Cicero didn't stop him. And so he got exiled once the war settled down and everything. 5 years later, oh, by the way, I should tell you, Cicero is what we call an inspettore, okay, which is like an inspector. So he's like a kind of like a Sherlock Holmes at the time. There are like seven in the country. So he's a pretty important person. So 5 years later, after the war, someone important goes missing, and they're trying to find him. The people in the city are trying to find him, and they can't. And so they decide, okay, we need to bring back somebody who might be able to do the job, and that's Cicero. So he comes back, he looks for the missing person, and as he delves into this investigation, he starts learning about the secrets of the city, and if I tell you anymore...
Okay, I like where this is going, though. I'm liking the plot. It's getting me pretty hooked on this. So basically, for people who maybe have no experience at all with Baldur's Gate, Dragon Age Origins, what kind of like combat can they expect? What kind of magic are you be able to use when you have these masks?
Right, well, if you talk about combat, gameplay-wise, you can expect, I think, a very customizable experience. For people who want to take it really strategically, you can, because we have a pause play function. So you can pause, you can switch to different characters, plan out your tactics, and do all that stuff. For people who just want to play like a Diablo, you can do that too. You can just like stick with one character and just focus on that one character, because you'll have the AI taking over the others. We'll have different difficulty levels, so it's accessible to players of all skills, all skill levels. So, yeah.
Any possibility of cooperative play, or is it strictly a single-player, story-driven RPG?
Currently, it's single-player.
Okay, I got the feeling of that, because I like switching characters, but I'm always like, a buddy could probably do this a little bit better than an AI could. But like you said, if you're playing it kind of, in my opinion, the right way, you're tactically switching, you're setting up, you're putting the enemies where you want to use them, you're not getting driven into a corner. It's all, you can play like Diablo, you're right, but I feel like you're limiting yourself, because this game just seems like designed with the team play, with the magic system. I'm liking what I see so far. And also, I mean, I know we can't see this over audio, but the art style, it's very distinct. It pops. I like it a lot. What made y'all decide to draw it in that manner?
I think the reason why we were inclined to do the art this way was because of the strength of our 2D team. Because this isn't the first game that we've worked on. We've done mobile games before this, Le Raven Mark, Romans in My Carpet, stuff like that. And I think we just felt that we had a really, really strong 2D art team. And so we wanted to capitalize on that. And so if you look at all the backgrounds, they're all hand-painted, they're all hand-drawn, all 2D work. But the models are all 3D. But most of it, I'd say, 2D. So I think that, yeah.
It looks exceptional. I agree. It really does. Because it's one of the games you walk by and you're like, wait a second, what is that? Because it almost looks like a cartoon come to life. And it really just seems like it would draw me into that world. And you have any idea of like, the length? Like, how long is the story you're trying to tell? Like, say if I wanted to go just for completion of the story, do you have any idea like how many hours you guys are ballparking right now?
It would probably take about 16 to 20 hours, I think.
I like that. That's a good solid number. So, I mean, this game, you said right now it's an alpha, so you got a lot of work to do on it. I'm liking what I'm seeing so far. Do you have any timeline for when this might come out and what platforms might be available on?
April. We're looking at April. Clearly the PS and the PC as well.
PC and PlayStation 4 sometime in April. I'm liking it's Masquerada, Songs and Shadows. You got to check this out. I'll definitely write that down. It's a little hard to Google, but I'll get the word out because it's very impressive, and I'm a huge fan of these kinds of RPGs. So, Nicholas, I appreciate it so much. Thank you for your time.
So much, you. Thank you so
thank
much.
You.
Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
All right, we'll continue with our holiday gift guide. And, well, we're going to start out with this. The Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes for the 3DS. Highly recommended, because if you're a fan of Zelda, especially like the old school type designs, I really like those type of Zeldas. And not only that, with this you could play locally with two other people, so it would be three in total. Also online, and also download play. So there's so much things to do in this game. I think if you're a Zelda fan, you will enjoy this for the 3DS. And I know Mandy always talks about Zelda and Patrick, so this is like, I know they will buy this for sure. Next one, Until Dawn for the PlayStation 4. You never played that, right?
No, I haven't played it.
One of my favorite games of this year. Highly recommend. If you're into like horror games, woo! Until Dawn is a must-have for the PlayStation 4. Man, it is scary. Depends what you do in the game. It affects the story. It's never the same. So whatever choices you make on one person, that might affect, like maybe someone else might die, might get hurt or something. It's like a butterfly effect, you know? So you got to be really careful with that stuff. Like you're picking on the choices during the game. Or if you finish it and you want to see like a different type of ending, go back from the beginning and play again. And you're going to see different, there's always going to be a different story every time you play, man. So it's a highly recommended game for the PlayStation 4. One of my favorites so far for this year. So what is the...
And then after that, we have Forza 6.
Yes.
For the Xbox One, which, again, if you're a racing fan, best racer of 2015.
Period.
Yeah. So it's fantastic. A lot of multiplayer options, just a lot of customizations that you can do, all the tuning, everything. If you're a car enthusiast, definitely go check out Forza 6.
Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
Hey, what's up, Gamertag Radio? Patrick here. I'll take a quick sec to tell you about this sweet new clothing company I recently discovered called TipsyElves.com. Now, Tipsy Elves specializes in selling some really cool Christmas sweaters for the holidays, but I gotta say this, if you're a hardcore gamer like me and you don't own a dedicated onesie for your late-night gaming marathons, you, sir or madam, are missing out. You gotta check out Tipsy Elves' line of jumpsuits. They have them for men, they have them for women, they come in a myriad of colors and styles, but the point is this, I managed to grab one of these bad boys just when Fallout 4 was coming out, so for the past 3 weeks, I have been cruising the wasteland in style, taking out Deathclaws, taking out Super Mutants, and basically saving the free world, all while being super comfortable, incredibly warm, and looking pretty snazzy too, I must say so myself. So if you're in the market for a gift for that special someone, or you just kind of want something cool for yourself, go check out TipsyElves.com. Anything you pick up in the store, when you go to the checkout center, enter the code GTR, and you get 20% off your entire order, and that applies to everything in the store right now. So go ahead, check it out. You might just find exactly what you're looking for the holiday season.
Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
Hey, what's up, Gamer Tag? Back here live, PlayStation Experience 2015 from San Francisco, California. And we're now looking at another really interesting title. It took me a high surprise over here. It's called Manifold Garden, and it's made by my good buddy William here. William, what is your involvement with the game?
So I basically do everything on the game.
Man of many trades.
So I worked on the game alone for about 2.5 years, and then earlier this year I brought on a part-time programmer, so there's 1.5 people working on the game now.
So Manifold Garden, for those who know nothing about it whatsoever, and I kind of felt that way too, I went into it blind, I picked it up pretty easily. Basically, break down Manifold Garden for someone who's never heard of it before.
Sure, so the game is basically M.C. Escher in first person. So it's about, you can change your gravity, change your orientation, walk on walls and ceilings. And the game is a metaphor for the last 400 years of physics. You start off learning how things fall. You know, you're learning how gravity in this game works. And then towards later on, you are figuring out the structure of the universe and piecing all that together and realizing that you can go down to go up, and that the shape of the world, like the shape that you experience, how objects fall, you start to piece that together in your head and then use that to solve puzzles and navigate. I talk about it. I describe it as a journey into the infinite abyss.
That's a good way to look at it. I like that, because pretty much is, I feel like what you put in is what you get out. Because I like the concept. You have the four walls. You have the ability to, you know, hold down R2 on PlayStation, switch between the wall, your alignment, And I like that it somehow, it eases you into it. It starts you out small. It starts with the boxes, and then it's two boxes, and then it's like, wait, I need to think of something else. So for me, by that fourth puzzle, I was kind of catching my head, being like, you know, wait a second, I feel like I understand this game, but there's something I'm not quite getting. And it really took examining the whole environment and coming back to it. So I like that Manifold kind of promotes that that creativity, where you know you're being challenged to solve what seems like a simple puzzle, but because of the scale of it and how you have that gravity set it up, I really like the opportunity involves for like having these really in-depth puzzles. So like besides, you know, the obvious things like opening doors and switches, like what else are we doing in Manifold Garden?
So I think there was one mechanic you got a hint of, which was the trees, right? You had to pick the boxes off the trees. And eventually that becomes a big part. That's sort of where the gardening aspect comes from, because you'll find eventually that those trees actually, you know, you have these boxes early on and you're using them to open your, you put the box on the switch and you open the door. But what you discover later on is that these boxes actually grow on trees. Okay. And you can actually grow trees from these boxes. There's another mechanic with water later on, and you can redirect streams of water and make bridges.
Right.
And then when you combine a water and a box, that grows a tree, which grows more boxes. So the world starts off very barren.
Yes.
And at first you're just, okay, I'm switching walls, putting box on the door. And that's just, that stuff needs to be there, otherwise
you're not going to get the grasp of it. You're not going to be able to challenge at that higher level.
It needs to start you somewhere, and that's a simple start. And then later on, you've got these trees that you're planting, and these streams of water, and the world is bending, and you're wrapping all that around and going down to go up. And that's sort of where, like earlier you said, there's you're understanding something and you're examining the environment, but there's always something you are quite not sure about, and that's sort of the game. The course of the game, but it just keeps escalating.
Keeps adding layers. Yeah, I like that, because like from my perspective, I wouldn't expect it. What you just said, having to redirect water, having these higher things, that's really interesting to me, because you have like this M.C. Escher design. You can do a lot of things with perspective. I liked how you went in there with the camera mode and you were able to actually go an outside view of the level itself, turn it around, have a different perspective. You know, even something simple as a field of view slider on a console game, that's really neat. A lot of people, you know, miss that, but they never knew they would miss that until their ability to be like, wait a second, this doesn't look quite right. Let me bring the camera back a bit more.
A big part of that is because the motion of changing gravity, walking up a wall, that's, I know, something that can induce motion sickness if you don't do it right. And I know, like, having the right field of view can contribute to that. So it's like making sure, you know, there's as much, we do as much as we can to accommodate players.
And I like the design of like what you call the hub world as well, where basically you're starting off in a what you think is an enclosed space, but then you take a step outside and it seems like there's almost like a vast sky, many structures, many objects all over the place. And what I like is you don't have the concept of death. There's no fall damage. So if I miss a jump, I'm basically just going to loop from the bottom back to the top and be able to reposition myself to maybe get a better landing on that time. I like that can become a pretty like a core part of the gameplay later on. Seems like I found that by accident.
Like that first world, you can almost not use that and still finish it. But it is sort of something nice to discover early on, and later it does become like mandatory to like know all that. Yeah.
This game requires homework. Forewarning.
The game doesn't have any characters or voiceover or dialogue, right? So you have to, the player gotta have some level of incentive to move forward.
I think that's important because, I mean, as I play a lot of games, but very few ones these days actually intellectually like challenge me anymore. And this one makes me feel like kind of a fifth grader. It's kind of like I should know geometry right now. So it's rewarding to be like, I think I'm gonna pick this up quickly. I'm looking forward to playing it. When is this gonna be available on PlayStation 4?
I don't have a release date.
Okay, yeah. So it's still very much in progress. You want to get it done.
We just finished going from pre-production to production. So like we spent the last 6 months writing a bunch of editor tools.
Yeah.
You know, it used to take me 2 weeks to make an entire level. Now it just takes a few hours.
You can just go in, tweak, and make a new level on the fly.
Right. So we've got that done. So I think moving forward, it's mostly content. I mean, there's still some tech, but the focus will be content and design.
Very nice. Oh, wow. I'm very impressed. William, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to me, man. Good luck on the game. Manifold Garden coming 2016, you think?
I hope so.
Okay. I'll be optimistic for you because I really want to play it as well. But Manifold Garden, check it out.
This is Gamer Tag Radio. Voicemail 786-2737-GTR.
And we're back to GTR episode 525, the PlayStation Experience 2015. I hope you all enjoyed listening to those interviews as much as I enjoyed recording them, because I always have a great time talking to passionate developers about these games that they pour their hearts and souls into. I mean, it's why I do what I do. It's so much fun to see the results of someone's hard work and dedication. And again, my hats off to all the great developers out there that I talked to and the ones that I didn't get a chance to talk to as well. I can't wait to see what the final result of your awesome games are going to be. Hopefully they come out next year, but again, I wish y'all the best of luck. Now, I wanted to take a second to talk a bit more about some other games that I didn't get a chance to mention in the interviews earlier, but I had a chance to play at the event, and I kind of wanted to expand on it a bit as well. So first, let's start off with Ubisoft. Far Cry Primal, obviously, is a new entry in the Far Cry series coming next year, early in February. Obviously, it's reusing the Far Cry 4 engine, but applying this ancient Neolithic, you know, early man prehistory experience of essentially playing as, you know, the original OG Beastmaster. So for me, I finally got a chance to play a demo of this at the PlayStation Experience. It was a very brief demo. It kind of basically just gave you all the starting weapons. You know, you had a hammer, you had a spear, you had two kinds of bows and arrows. Put you out in the field and said, hey, go explore around and go take over this enemy village. So what I love about this is it takes the mechanics from Far Cry 4, namely you have the ability to, you know, where you used to be able to use your binoculars to look through and, you know, scope out the area and mark targets and stuff like that. Now, because you're a Beastmaster in Far Cry Primal, you actually have an owl you can summon and physically control that can swoop around entire areas, survey the landscape, mark enemies, and then actually go down and physically kill them to take out some hard-to-reach sentries. And then as on the ground, as the main character, you have the ability to summon a multitude of different animals. You can use like jaguars, wolves, bears. You know, from the list I saw, there's at least, you know, a dozen of these animals in the final game. Like saber-tooth tigers in there as well, but really, really fun to have a companion animal in this game. You can use them as cover, you can use them as a distraction, you can use them to save your life. A lot of really cool strategies put into a game that, you know, from the outside perspective, doesn't really look that deep because, again, it's kind of a caveman simulation, but it actually is the amount of variety that you had to take on these missions. And then also the mechanic as well as fire returns. You know, fire was always an important mechanic in the Far Cry series. Of course, now you can also use that to your advantage because most things in this game are made out of very flammable materials. So you can use fire to, you know, bait enemies out, you know, corner them, or corral them into a certain area to make it easier to kill them. And of course, all the traditional Far Cry mechanics recur as well. You have the stealth mechanic, you have the takedown mechanic, stuff like that, throwing weapons, bows and arrows, really cool melee animations for all the clubs and spears and axes and stuff like that. So from the little bit I played, it was a very brief demo, maybe only like 20 minutes. I really enjoyed Far Cry Primal a lot. To me, this gets me really excited when you have an existing engine and instead of maybe playing it safe and it's kind of making another sequel in the series of Far Cry of, you know, a fish out of water, landing an unexpected beautiful location and, you know, learning how to be, you know, a masked murderer by the end of the game. This game paints that in a bit more realistic light because you already are an established, you know, warrior. You're very strong. People respect you. And now you're kind of the first guy out there to really tame wild animals and make them submit to your will. So as you'd imagine, in that society, it kind of makes you a real threat to the status quo. So I'm really looking forward to Far Cry Primal a lot. It was a lot of fun to play. I'm already really excited to get my hands on the final version, but it was just nice to be able to see the game in motion. And I can tell you right now, you know, even if you're a little on the fence about Far Cry Primal, or maybe you just, you know, you didn't enjoy the past Far Cry as much as you thought you would, I would say give Primal a look because it really does offer something unique out there, because there really isn't any other game out there doing this style of gameplay right now. And for me, you know, as a history guy, I always enjoy games that take a look into pre-recorded history and have that little creativity, that blank canvas, if you will, to create, you know, whatever they want, this really fully imagined Neolithic ancient man world. So I can't wait for the game. It looks like a lot of fun, the final version, because I certainly enjoyed the brief taste I got at the PlayStation Experience. Now, moving on, let's talk about Capcom now. Capcom was showing off two things at this event: the recently announced Resident Evil Umbrella Corps and Street Fighter V was shown off in a more complete version as well. But let's start with Resident Evil real fast, because this is a game I pretty much had no experience with before going in and playing it at the event. So Umbrella Corps is essentially this new team-based third-person shooter they're making in the Resident Evil style, where unlike the past games where you played as, you know, famous people like Leon Kennedy or Chris Redfield, now you really are just playing as nameless, faceless Umbrella Corporation employees, you know, paramilitary soldiers sent in to deal with the Raccoon City incident. Kind of similar to that Operation Raccoon City game we got a couple of years ago, but this is more of new of a reimagining of that style, where the camera is a lot closer to your person. Think almost a Resident Evil 4 style camera system, but with the real emphasis on team mechanics as well. So, for instance, you have like 3-on-3, 4-versus-4, you spawn to a map, and the map is populated with a lot of zombies as well. But as you start off the game, you have this transmitter on your back that prevents the zombies from basically interacting with you. It obviously like blocks them out sonically or something. So your goal is you either aim to execute the other team and kill them off, or you can shoot the transmitters on their backs to make the zombies swarm and attack them, making their jobs much more difficult as well. So it's kind of this back and forth, interesting little meta game of trying to use the zombies for your advantage while trying to sneak around and take out the other enemy team. You know, what I played, it was a little rough. It felt like an alpha version of the gameplay, but the idea was pretty strong, I would say. It just needs a lot of fine-tuning in terms of bullet damage, hit detection, a couple of other things like clipping issues as well. But the solid, you know, the core gameplay idea seems like a pretty good, solid team-based shooter. We just have to wait and see what the final version is going to offer in terms of modes, gameplay features, online functionality, things like that. But obviously, because we're not getting Resident Evil 7 anytime soon, it's nice to have them still expand the Resident Evil, you know, franchise out and try different things like this. So Umbrella Corps, you know, the little bit I got to play, I had a little bit of fun at it, but it just needs a lot more work, and I kind of look forward to seeing the future of the game once it gets a bit more, you know, hours and, you know, get into the gameplay development process. Now, on the other side of the coin, Street Fighter V. Yeah, this is, I'm sure y'all have heard me talk about many, many times in the past. I'm a huge Street Fighter fan. You know, I credit Street Fighter IV as the game that pretty much brought me into the fighting game full completely, where, you know, before I maybe casually danced around with fighting games growing up as a kid. Once Street Fighter IV came out in 2009, I was like, you know what? I love fighting games. They are one of my favorite genres now, and I can't wait to play a bunch of them in the future. So fast forward now, Street Fighter V right around the corner. So I got to play Street Fighter V a little bit at E3 earlier this year, and, you know, maybe got to play a couple of matches, you know, just enough to, you know, whet my appetite. But now at PlayStation Experience this past weekend, I got to play a lot more games. I got to play maybe at least an hour to an hour and a half of the game, trying out the different new characters. You know, obviously they announced the final new character in the game, whose name is Fong, who's a Shadow Liu operative that has very crazy, weird movement sets. You got to watch a video of him to get my point across. But the point is, the roster is now complete, and they had a pretty solid working build of the game at playable PlayStation Experience with a lot of those new characters like Laura Matsuda, Rashid, and you have, of course, you know, the returning characters as well. But let me tell you this, Street Fighter V is a ton of fun because it is an offensive, aggressive fighting game player's dream. The V-skill and V-trigger mechanics for every character are unique and totally mix up the gameplay, because you actually have to learn how to play and how to fight against every character, because, you know, their V-skill and V-trigger can dramatically change up any match at any time, whether it's an overhead attack, a parry, a move that gets you behind your opponent quickly for mix-up, things like that. It's so unexpected, but it's so fun as well, because you can see the combo potential in this game. I gotta say, I was lucky enough to play against this really good guy at the event. Clearly, he was on like a totally different level than I could ever hope to be without, you know, a lot of practice, but he pretty much put me through the ringer. But it was impressive to me because it showed off the capabilities of the combo system in this game, you know, how complex you can get down to, you know, the frame-by-frame, you know, setups, mix-ups, and, you know, link combos that Street Fighter has always been known for, but they're so much more flashier now, which I feel is great because it's going to attract a new audience to this game, you know, where the past maybe it would have been seen as too intimidating to get into. I think Street Fighter V is doing a much better job of bringing new players into the fold, because, you know, on the surface, it's easy to play. You can pick up the new characters very quickly, learn the special moves, start having a good time. But if you actually want to get into the nitty gritty of the technical details, you know, basically go to the fight lab and you want to get better and be the best, it has that deep levels, those deep layers, intricacies. And it's so fun to play against competent players, because the whole, you know, the mind games that you have to play with each other to get an opening, you know, to get, you know, the right footsie attack, to get that right overhead. I mean, it's so cool from a fighting games fan perspective, all the new things to bring to Street Fighter V. And if you haven't even played Street Fighter, you know, a long time, you're not familiar with it, I think 5 is really going to change your mind, because
I think it's just that perfect balance of making a game that is an absolute blast that you can pick up and play and have a great time with your buddies on the couch. But you can also, you know, go online and play against the best of the best in the world and train yourself to be, you know, good enough where you start to go out and, you know, maybe join some tournaments, win some money, you know, because I think that's the Street Fighter effect, is it kind of brings people into the fighting games fold. And, you know, before they realize it, they're hooked, because there really is no other adrenaline rush out there like that showdown one versus one in Street Fighter. But again, can't wait for the game to come out. It's coming out early next year on PlayStation 4 and PC. I'm super excited, but just the chance to get play more of it at this event really solidified how big of a deal I think this is going to be come next year when, you know, Street Fighter 5 starts showing up at prominent tournaments around the country like Evil Ocean 2016 or Final Round 2016 as well. I can't wait to see the competitive scene for this game, because I know I'm going to play so much of this. Me and my local buddies are already really excited to dive into this game, because we've been craving some new fighting games, and to me Street Fighter 5 is the creme de la creme. Can't wait. Best of luck to Ono and the team over there at Capcom to finish up the game, because they have a wonderful package on their hands, and I'm so excited to get my hands on the final product. Now, I had one more thing I wanted to talk about, because I was lucky enough to actually to get a chance to play Uncharted 4's multiplayer at PlayStation Experience. And they had this whole elaborate booth set up, styled in the Uncharted tropical jungle style. They did a great job with the marketing of it. But the point is, I got to play my first match of Uncharted 4 multiplayer, and let me tell you this. This game is a lot of fun. I don't care what your skill level is for third-person shooters. Uncharted 4 does a masterful job of making you feel like you are, you know, Nathan Drake, essentially. Yes, you can obviously play as other people besides him in campaign, but the sense of your ability to scale the environment so fluidly and, you know, get behind cover dynamically, get, you know, flip over cover, climb up on top, to have that verticality, that sense of being able to jump down on your opponents and surprise them, because the cool free running, if you parkour element, if you will, that is familiar in the Uncharted series, plays a huge role in the multiplayer as well. So, you know, if you're having a tough time and you're pinned down in a corridor by the enemy team, all you have to do is run around the side of the building, climb up the top of the building, and shoot down on them. And you coordinate with your team to do that, because most of the multiplayer maps have these pretty prominent verticality buildings designed for you to climb and flank and take out the enemy team. Now, on top of that as well, you have these new supernatural elements they've added that, you know, kind of homages to the original game, you know, like the, you know, the ancient cursed, you know, like the ancient cursed sarcophagus from the first game, where you set it down and it starts spawning out these AoE attack, you know, this attack magic that'll kill anybody who gets too close, and other things like that. You know, you can kind of turn, you know, summon the fire warriors from Uncharted 3 as well. A lot of cool little mystic supernatural homages to the single player games kind of spice up the multiplayer as well. But I mean, the kind of the kicker here is, you know, this is a beautiful game. You know, obviously it doesn't look like they really took any shine away from the single player, you know, graphics engine for the multiplayer. It looks just as fluid. It runs just as well at 60 frames per second. And it's just visually a spectacularly looking game. But for me, more importantly, it's a very fun game too. It's a very fun shooter to play in a team-based setting like that with your buddies. It's just a lot of fun to run around, you know, beating up on people, you know, reviving your friends, you know, rolling around the environment, and basically just kind of feeling like a bunch of action heroes. So it's kind of like, you know, like you're the A team fighting against the B team, because, you know, of course you're going to win because your team's the best. But just, you know, if you ever wanted to be, you know, feel like a really cool badass, you know, and you just, you know, you're not really into those typical hardcore shooters, you just don't have the patience to get good at them, I think Uncharted 4 is really going to impress a lot of people, because it seems like it's going to be a great accessible game to get into. But it also, I think, is going to have, you know, that, you know, fun factor that keeps people around. You know, a lot of people always talk about what is that magic formula that gets people to keep playing multiplayer games post-launch, especially a game like Uncharted 4, with the most of the focus is on the single-player portion. A lot of people don't really care about the multiplayer for that mark. And that's fair enough. I know a lot of us are pretty much buying it for the single player. But, you know, having a chance to play the multiplayer in Uncharted 4, I think, really got me excited, because I think this is going to be a very complete, very fun package. I'm going to play a lot of the multiplayer. I'm looking forward to it. Because, again, it's just, it's like nothing else out there right now. It's just pretty unique. And, you know, since we haven't had multiplayer in the last Tomb Raider game as well, which they took out, I kind of feel there's a void that needs to be filled by Uncharted 4's multiplayer for that style of, you know, large, open, third-person shooter, team-based, you know, fun game. It doesn't have to be super realistic. It's just designed for you and your buddies to hop on and have a bunch of fun and laugh and, you know, just have that great time that you expect from, you know, an online game. And Uncharted 4, you know, thankfully has those cool multiplayer features to give you that experience. So that's about a wrap for PlayStation Experience 2015. I'd love to hear again, you know, any feedback you guys have, if you like the coverage, what else y'all would like to see for us and from future coverage of events like these. But again, all you, if you want to send us any feedback, just send it to fanmail@gamertagradio.com, or again, leave us a voicemail at 786-273-7GTR. And don't forget, you can find us on the play.it network as well at play.it/gamertagradio. So that's going to be a wrap for me. Hope you all have a wonderful rest of your week. And if you enjoyed my coverage of PlayStation Experience 2015. So for, until next time, this is Paulston J signing off.
You're listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.